Welcome to another episode of the WCAX Election Podcast. I'm your producer, Brett Miller, here with WCAX political reporter Calvin Cutler.
Hi, Brett.
Calvin, welcome as always. Let's start big picture here. Why do we poll? The numbers in these basically represent a snapshot in time. So what information are we hoping to get when we commission a poll like this?
A snapshot in time is exactly right. I mean, it's how voters and how the electorate is feeling at any given moment. Now, this particular poll was commissioned by WCAX and administered by the University of New Hampshire Polling Center. Now, the answers were from September 29th to October 3rd. This poll, it surveyed 765 Vermonters online. The margin of error is 3.5%. But really, you know, it just gathers the temperature on how voters are feeling on candidates, their name recognition, their likability. Also how they would vote on several ballot items and other things like that. So really just a snapshot in time, if you will.
So we're going to talk about all the races that we polled, but let's begin with the governor race. In this poll, Governor Phil Scott leads Brenda Siegel 48% to 31%. That in and of itself is not earth-shattering, but what stood out to me here is the numbers among Democrats specifically. How did those numbers sugar out, and what can we learn from them?
Yeah, so with this, and we actually saw this with polling back over the summer, Governor Scott continues to earn a lot of his support, really, from Democrats and from independents. So for candidates looking to unseat Governor Scott, whether that be Brenda Siegel or whether back in 2020, whether that be David Zuckerman, they really have to try to focus on those Democrats and those independents. I think it's also worth noting, too, that from this poll or from the poll that was conducted back during the August primaries to this poll as well, Brenda Siegel has gained about 10 percentage points on the governor. So she has closed that gap a little bit. But you're right in pointing out that the governor is still ahead.
Another thing that stood out to me from this data set was the name recognition gap between the governor and Brenda. Almost 100% of the people polled here knew Phil Scott, were familiar with him enough to have an opinion on him. On the other side, you've got Brenda Siegel. She's the Democratic nominee. She's run for office before, but 4 in 10 people in this poll don't know enough about her to say whether they have a favorable or an unfavorable opinion of her. Why is that?
Yeah, I think that's an important point. And especially, I'm glad you brought up that she had run for office twice before. It is worth noting that she didn't or was not victorious in those previous primaries, so she didn't enjoy as much press as she is this time. Certainly, you know, the governor, you know, Governor Scott is a household name in Vermont politics. He's been in office for about 2 decades now, so he's been around the block. And Brenda Siegel, you know, a lot of the name recognition and the attention that she's received has been in the press and for her advocacy on many issues, from homelessness to substance abuse, things where she has clashed, if you will, with Governor Scott. And you know, again, the timing of this poll, I think, is important, you know, September into October. So we're still about a month out from the August primaries. And we really haven't seen any big ad spending, TV advertisements, mailers, you know, none of that really has ramped up yet. And this was before many of the significant debates as well. So I think we can certainly expect the, you know, Brenda Siegel's name recognition to increase in the next few weeks as well.
Moving to the lieutenant governor race, progressive Democrat David Zuckerman leads in this poll 51% to Joe Benning, the Republicans 35%. The name recognition factor jumped out at me again with this one. More people are familiar with Zuckerman than with Benning, but Zuckerman also has higher unfavorable numbers than Benning. 34% of people surveyed had a favorable view of David Zuckerman, and 30% had an unfavorable view. Is that a coincidence, or is there something else for us to take away from this?
I think there definitely is something else to take away. As you mentioned, David Zuckerman has been in office for many years now, as has Joe Benning, but Joe Benning has mostly been within the infrastructure of, if you will, of the Senate, where Zuckerman has, you know, held the top post in the Senate. I think many Vermonters know who Zuckerman is. They know his policy positions. They know his leadership style. And for some Vermonters, they do not resonate with, the progressive democratic vision that David Zuckerman offers. They think some of the issues surrounding affordability, around climate change, around agriculture and others, might not be the right direction for the state. So I think that's partially why we see that stark divide in David Zuckerman's approval rating.
It struck me that name recognition alone is not enough to win, because by the more people who are familiar with you, who are familiar with your record, the more the candidate opens themselves up to people to disapprove or have an unfavorable view of them.
Exactly. And it really all depends on the candidate's background, their political persuasion, were they a leader from the business community? Well, I think really what it gets down to is the more you're in the public eye, the more you're in the public sphere, people build opinions of you, whether they like you or disapprove of you. That's part of being in the public eye and being an elected leader.
Moving along to the Senate race, Congressman Peter Welch outperformed Gerald Malloy, getting 62% compared to Malloy's 28% in this poll. These numbers are consistent with conventional wisdom. What does the Malloy campaign have to say about these numbers?
Well, the Malloy campaign, they've said that they're continuing to hit the pavement. They're hearing from Vermonters. When you ask them about how they're being received, they point to a separate poll, which was completed by Trafalgar. That one had had Gerald Malloy within just a few percentage points of Peter Welch. So I think certainly his campaign would rather tout those numbers. What I think is really fascinating is when you look at the approval rating of Phil Scott and Joe Benning versus Malloy, there is a stark difference, I think, there in terms of how the candidates are received and who would vote for them. And I think it speaks more broadly to how Vermonters view the roles of these offices and the issues that these candidates will be voting on. Political scientists I speak with say, really, at the end of the day, should Gerald Malloy be elected to the Senate, he would very likely caucus with Senator Mitch McConnell and Republicans in the Senate, where certainly, Joe Benning or Governor Scott, should they be elected, they would not be dealing with those issues. They would not be dealing much with anything down in Congress. So it's a totally separate set of issues. And I think that really reflects in this polling.
When we see multiple polls that are conducted, granted, this Trafalgar poll would have been conducted at a different time. It predates this WCAX poll. But when we see such starkly different results from different polls, how do those numbers get reached?
Yeah, that's a great question. And a lot of it has to do with the methodology of the polling. This poll from UNH was conducted in a little bit of a different way, sort of a newer way of polling. It's an online poll where folks are sent a text message or they receive a call asking them to sign up and fill out this poll online. So it is a newer way of polling. Some critics have said that it's reaching a different demographic of Vermonters, and that not all Vermonters of all political persuasions are, represented in this poll. So I think it's one of those things. Time will have to tell. Again, getting back to our first question, it's more so just a finger on the pulse of how Vermonters are feeling.
I always go back to during the primary when Dr. Lewis Myers, during the debate, called the recent WCAX poll at that time incredibly crappy. And then, after primary night, it turned out that it was just crappy for him because he was the one losing that one. But
there, I think there is definitely a way of thinking among some in political spheres across the country that polls in some ways can become self-fulfilling prophecies, right? If you see, Dr. Lewis Myers or somebody else down in the polls, the voter, some might say, the voter would say, well, maybe I shouldn't vote for this person. Maybe I should cast my ballot for a Molly Gray or a Becca Ballant. But that's the thing, is it gets back to, we were speaking a few weeks ago or a couple months ago at this point with Chris Graff, former AP bureau chief. And, you know, there's been study after study to try to understand what motivates voters and what really gets them to the polls. And we still don't have a great idea. Is it honking waves? Is it yard signs? Is it campaign events? Is it advertisements, TV ads, mailers, door knocking? I mean, there's a number of ways that candidates reach the electorate. And, you know, polls are one way to take a look at that. But certainly it's there's a lot of questions that we still don't have.
Well, let's move down the ballot here. Let's look at the data from the congressional race. This set of data was interesting to me because it's the only race that we polled where a third party candidate is really making some noise. Can you talk a little bit about how this poll illustrates the contours of this race?
Yeah, this is a fascinating race that I think not a lot of people really would have seen shaking out the way that it has. You've got, of course, Becca Ballant, you know, the Democratic candidate running under the Democratic ticket. You've got Leah Madden, who is a self-described independent that won the Republican nomination, but the Republican Party is not supporting him financially or in other way, in any other means. And then you've got the most the true conservative candidate, Burlington's Erica Reddick, running as a libertarian, trying to chip off some of those votes. And what we're really seeing, of course, is that Becca Ballant is continuing to dominate in this race, earning a majority of the support of Vermonters in this poll, where Leah Madden and Erica Reddick, they are splitting it a little bit. But even if you put their support together, it would not be enough votes. Just plain and simple. And I think this one, after talking with, you know, folks within the GOP, this is an interesting race that there are a lot of folks in the Republican Party, they tell me, will be reflecting on of you know, where could have the Republican Party tried to recruit more candidates, or what happened with the split between Erica Reddick and Anya Tino back in the primary. So I think this is going to be a really fascinating race to watch going forward, but also to reflect upon as well.
Looking at the favorable, unfavorable numbers for Becca Ballant, when we polled back in April, 55% of those polled didn't have an opinion one way or another on Becca Ballant. Fast forward to the start of October, 82% of those polled had an opinion, and 46% of those polled had a favorable opinion, compared to 26 who had an unfavorable opinion of her. In terms of name recognition, that's a huge leap over a span of 6 months. She had the biggest leap here of anyone we polled for this cycle. What did she do here that candidates didn't or weren't able to do?
I would say one of the most intense primary elections that we've seen in modern Vermont history really rocketed Becca Ballant's name recognition to the top, established her as not just a huge figure in the Vermont Democratic Party, but also in Vermont politics as well. Certainly, you know, there was that hotly competed or competitive primary race between her and Molly Gray, each of the candidates, you know, raising hundreds of thousands of dollars. And of course, there was over $1 million that was spent on Becca Ballant's behalf by outside groups, by super PACs, on TV advertisements, mailers, social media ads, you name it. So in terms of the name recognition, that really made Becca Ballant a household name in politics.
You talk about kind of the self-fulfilling prophecy of it all. Does being in a competitive race add to that juice for the candidates involved? Are they gaining more name recognition purely by virtue of being in a competitive race?
Yes, absolutely. And that's the thing. You know, just look at the press. You know, the press and the media, they focus time and attention on some of these most competitive races.
They do.
And so we do, because that's what Vermonters care about, and that's where the attention is.
Lastly here, Calvin, I want to try and make sense of the numbers having to do with President Biden and the direction of the country. A majority of those polled in this survey approve of Biden's job performance, but a majority also feel that the country is moving in the wrong direction. Calvin, make it make sense.
Simply put, Brett, it's the economy. You know, about of the third of Vermonters that were polled, yeah, say that we're going in the wrong direction. They say that inflation is one of their biggest issues, along with the economy and government spending. And about a quarter of those voters also say that in political polarization is a really big issue as well. Those are the top two issues among voters. Of those that say that we're on the right track, 22% say it's because President Biden and Democrats are doing well with their legislative agenda, and another 18% say that it's because President Trump is not in power. So there's definitely a dynamic there. You know, you can examine how is that possible? Really, two reasons: because of the economy and what supporters of President Biden think are some of the more pressing issues.
Thank you for that analysis, Calvin. After a quick message from our sponsor, we'll be back with our interview with Sarah Copeland Hansis, Democrat for Secretary of State. The WCAX Election Podcast is sponsored by Homeport, a locally owned and operated business on the Church Street Marketplace with four floors full of everything you might need to make your house a home. I'm here with Sarah Copeland Hansis, Democrat for Vermont, Secretary of State. Sarah, thank you for being here.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
You're a longtime state representative from Orange County. Could you give a little bit more of your background for listeners who aren't familiar with you?
Sure. I'll start back at the beginning and go quickly through it. I grew up in Corinth and Bradford, graduated from Oxbow High School here in Bradford. Went to the University of Vermont, and then came back to the Upper Valley to get my teaching certificate through what's now called the Upper Valley Educator Institute. I taught for two school years, and then had the great fortune of being able to stay home with my kids for 8 years. I continued to coach and work with young people throughout that time.
What did you coach?
I coached field hockey, softball, a little bit of basketball here and there. And then when my kids started playing sports, there was no longer field hockey. So I coached soccer, which is sort of a joke because I never played soccer. But, you know, little kids, they don't know the difference. And then in 2004, I ran for the legislature, and I've spent 18 years in the House, served for a decade on the healthcare committee, trying to work towards universal healthcare affordability, prescription drug prices, access to medical care. And I spent a biennium as majority leader. And then for the last 4 years, I've been chair of government operations, which oversees many of the departments of the Secretary of State's office.
So why make the plunge for Secretary of State? I mean, what about that role is appealing? Why make the jump?
Well, you know, the work that I did during my 4 years as chair of government operations really helped me to understand some of the challenges that are coming at us in the elections realm. And that's really the most high profile role or duty of the Secretary of State, is to be the chief elections administrator. So between seeing how those policy discussions shaped up and then thinking back to my 18 years of running for my own House seat, I can really see that there's a lot of ways that we need to strengthen and improve democracy that build on what Jim Condos has done for our election access and our elections security. But then also go a little bit deeper into making sure that people understand how government works, how democracy works, and how to participate in that.
Is that the top issue on people's minds when they head to the poll, election security?
Election security is definitely in people's minds, and a lot of that honestly comes from the misinformation that is out there about stolen elections. Dating back to the 2020 election. In Vermont, I feel very confident that we have secure elections. We have individually elected town and city clerks who are sworn into office to uphold democracy and to run fair, accessible, and safe elections. And I know that they take that job very seriously. I know that Jim Condos and our elections team at the Secretary of State's office has done a great job of overseeing that, of facilitating these fair, safe, and accessible elections. And So I think if you ask what's on the top of people's minds this November, I'm quite sure it is more concerns around inability to find affordable housing in the area where your job is, or inflation that is pinching your paycheck, or the inability to find dependable childcare that is high quality and affordable within within your paycheck. But when people start to think about democracy, and when I talk with people about democracy, a lot of people go, oh yeah, you know, like, I don't remember my civics education, or I never had a civics class. And I think there's a lot of work that we can do there to strengthen people's understanding and really entice people to participate in democracy.
How do you fight that disinformation, especially surrounding the elections? Even recently, there's been a wave of, as you may have heard, public records requests across the state of Vermont and nationally as well, for people seeking to observe and view materials related to the 2020 election. How do you fight that disinformation?
Well, I want to say first and foremost about these recent requests. You know, we are obligated to hold on to those ballots in our town clerk's office for 22 months after the election. And that's for the purpose of making sure that when you have town clerks who are in the run up to the next election, that they can dispose of the materials from 2 years ago. It's unfortunate that these requests waited until the very last moment. These ballots have been sitting in town clerks' offices for nearly 2 years now. But it is the public's right to review those ballots, to check and see if the results that were reported on election day 2 years ago match what the ballots say. And you know, it would have been nice if it had happened a bit earlier, so that the clerks in those municipalities weren't crunched with trying to prepare for this upcoming election at the same time that they are trying to facilitate a fair and open and transparent review of the election from 2 years ago. So how do we combat that? First and foremost, we have a lot of transparency laws that are on the books that should help give people I think confidence that that our elections are fair and safe and accessible. But honestly, if you don't understand how elections work and how we know they're fair, then you're susceptible to misinformation about stolen elections. And so let's get out there and make sure that folks understand how we run elections and how we know that the vote count that we arrive at on election day is secure.
The Republican running for state auditor wants to audit Vermont's election system, particularly mail-in ballots. WCAX reported on some voters who have 5 or 6 ballots sent to them, some not even addressed to people who lived at that residence. What will you do to ensure the integrity of mail-in ballots?
So we have a lot of safeguards that are in place, and our elections division fields these questions from town clerks all the time. At the end of the day, it is illegal and it is prosecutable for somebody to execute a ballot that is not their own. And so, you know, because I live in an apartment where, you know, Joe Smith used to live and Joe Smith's ballot arrives, does not make it legal for me to execute that ballot. And indeed, if I did, I would be doing something that is prosecutable. And when Joe Smith tries to go vote in the town or from the apartment that he's living in now, that's going to trigger me to get caught in that illegal activity. And, you know, I think what's important for people to understand is that Vermonters, by and large, hold very sacred our right to vote. And in fact, I have heard many people over the years express to me a lot of reasons why they don't feel comfortable voting. You know, for instance, I don't know all of the people who are on the ballot, so I don't want to go and use my sacred vote in ignorance.
If only there was a podcast where they could hear, you know, about all the candidates.
If only. That's a great idea. Let's do this again in 2 years. But that's a great segue to one of my initiatives that I would like to enact. Now that we have universal vote by mail, let's make sure that we also produce a voter guide so that when you get your ballot in the mail, you get a listing of all the candidates, their social media, their websites, maybe a 100-word statement about why they're running, to really help people. Because, you know, with the decline in local newspapers, it's really hard sometimes in some of these local House and Senate races, and forget about, you know, sheriff or high bailiff or some of those other positions. It's hard to get a clear vision of what somebody's platform is and why they're running.
I wanted to shift a little bit and ask about an issue that is playing out in other states, ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting. We just saw it play out in Alaska. Where do you stand on ranked choice voting? And whether it should be implemented in all of our elections, just our congressional elections or presidential elections. Where do you stand on it?
So I support moving towards ranked choice voting. I think it's going to be a learning experience for Vermont voters. And so I would have us move forward in a slow and systematic way and let people see how it works, understand how it works, and then say, oh yeah, I'd like to have that in another election. So I would propose that we move first to ranked choice voting for the presidential primary in 2024. That is a time when there is almost always more than two candidates on the ballot. And it's a great time for people to be able to compare their selections, choose a first choice and a second choice and third choice. And it'll be a good learning opportunity for our local elections administrators who, you know, for whom this would be a very new experience. And doing that on a day when it's not a general election with a lot of other races on the ballot at the same time is probably a perfect time just from the logistics side. To try that. And between Vermonters seeing how that works and also the ability to watch what happens now in Burlington, Vermonters will get a better sense of how ranked choice voting works and hopefully will like it and want to move forward with it for other elections in the future.
Some critics of ranked choice voting would say that it can lead to more homogenized elections where candidates might not want to take or stake out a policy position and potentially alienate some voters or lose voters. Is that a concern of yours, or do you see that as being a valid concern?
So I don't think that staking out policy positions is the concern. I think actually the ability to pull in voters who might agree with you on that policy position on the left or the right is a good idea. I think what candidates are going to have to do is then realize that they can't go out and go negative on their opponent, because they want to make sure that the people who like their opponent might throw their second choice vote, in their direction. In I think a lot of what we see is that ranked choice voting really encourages more civility in elections and encourages people to reach out across the electorate instead of just saying, well, I can get elected with my, 40% of people over here, so I'm not even going to talk to them. So I think it can be strengthening, and I think the way we in Vermont do democracy, it likely will be strengthening of our civility and our discourse across the political spectrum.
The Secretary of State, of course, has a ton of other responsibilities that are not election related. What are some non-election priorities of yours?
Yeah, so state archives. We have a giant warehouse in Middlesex that is climate controlled and floor to ceiling, documents from the beginning of Vermont's history. Many records right now, though, are being kept electronically. And so, as you can imagine, there's not only a transition in how we take in and store all of these records, but there needs to be a transition in the way different state agencies hold on to those records. When it was a physical piece of paper, you could see the size of the box and you could say, oh God, I need to go through that and make sure that, the email about next week's all staff picnic is chucked out and the critical documents are being saved. We need to make sure that we have that that kind of good hygiene and good records management in the digital era. So that's one priority on the State Archives realm. Let's talk about the Office of Professional Regulation. You know, this is first and foremost intended to ensure, you know, public health and safety. And so the idea is that you want to reduce barriers to being able to enter a particular profession, so that all we're looking at is making sure that that a licensed professional is qualified and will not harm public health or public safety. I think, have more that we can do. I hear stories from Vermonters all the time, folks who've moved here from somewhere else. There's more that we can do in terms of making sure that when you were educated in another state or in another country, that you can come here and seamlessly apply for licensure, registration, accreditation to practice in Vermont. And so I would want to make sure that in the Office of Professional Regulation, we are looking for places where we're not quite up to snuff in terms of helping new Vermonters practice to their full potential.
You know, if elected, you'll be replacing longtime Secretary of State Jim Condos. Is there anywhere you're both Democrats, but is there anywhere where you differ from him, either on policy or practice or anything like that?
So I would expect that policy-wise, we'll be very much aligned. And you know, Jim came into this role of having been chair of the Senate Government Operations Committee. I'm coming in from sort of a similar track on the House side. And so, you know, there will be things that I do differently. I'm going to focus a lot on outreach and education. I'm going to bring back the coordinator position that helps to develop civics curriculum for our school teachers. I intend to be out in Vermont communities a lot. You know, civics education, dry and bland, you know, from the head of a classroom is not going to be engaging. But I want to get out and actually, you know, table at the festival, or you know, have a booth at the farm market weekends, and really engage with people about how to do democracy. Because when you see the power of democracy, and you see that, hey, you know, when me and a bunch of my neighbors all agree on something, we can get something done. Because in Vermont, we are close to our elected officials, and so really empowering people to understand how to make democracy work for them, whether your concern is about the fact that you can't buy a house because there's no affordable housing, or you can't find childcare, or you're critically concerned about climate change, you can band together with your neighbors and express your ideas to elected officials, and you can see progress in Vermont.
Briefly, I just wanted to circle back around to mail out ballots momentarily. Of course, we've mailed them out for several elections. Do you support mailing them out for town meeting day as well, moving to Australian ballot or mailing out ballots? And if so, what would that mean for town meeting day?
Well, this is a conversation that Vermonters need to have. And right now, you know, each town can or city can decide whether they're going to hold an open town meeting where Vermonters come in and actually adopt their budget and elect their town officials, or whether they want to do that all by Australian ballot, and people don't need to come in person. If we were to, from Montpelier, just declare that we're doing Australian ballot for town meeting day, that would be the end of town meeting in Vermont, and it would be the end of that experiment in direct democracy. It would be the end of, you know, the Boy Scouts doing a spaghetti dinner afterward, or the, you know, the church ladies cooking lunch for people in the town. It would mean the end of a lot of traditions that a lot of communities hold very dear. Are there ways that we can make participation in town government more accessible for more people? Yeah, and a lot of communities are working on that right now. But I wouldn't advocate, from my office's perspective, ending town meeting as we know it. I think that's a conversation that we need to have more broadly in Vermont.
Sarah Copeland Hanzis, Democrat for Vermont Secretary of State, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Normally, we'd have another interview for you here, but the Republican candidate for Secretary of State, H. Brooke Page, is also running for treasurer, so you'll hear from him next week when we focus on that race. Thank you so much for listening. For the WCAX Election Podcast, I'm Brett Miller.
And I'm Calvin Cutler.
The WCAX Election Podcast is sponsored by Homeport, a locally owned and operated business on the Church Street Marketplace with four floors full of everything you might need to make your house a home.